This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. I'm Holly from Community Waikato. And Harvey Brooks again with us today in the studio from Wellbeing Waikato. Thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure. Kia ora.
It's always great to see you, and we're having another one of our data conversations. And this one very timely, of course, with everything that's been going on with regard to councils, Head Start, Backstop, blah, blah, blah. But we're going to talk a little bit about what successful local government looks like and what sort of evidence we should use to judge it, that kind of thing. And what councils use, what sort of evidence they can use to measure themselves. So interesting conversation today, and I'm going to let you kind of start off where you are. I've got a whole range of questions for you, but yeah. I thought I'd let you context this a little bit for us.
Yeah, thanks, Holly. And yeah, to be open right at the beginning, this is probably a conversation which is a mix of fact and opinion.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of this is sort of predicated on my own reckons in terms of what might or should be happening here.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who's spent a few decades behind the wall of local government. So I think I have a bit of an idea of what's going on there. And I suppose I've watched this process and, you know, talk about local government reform. Well, actually, it's as old as local government.
Yeah.
So it's kind of persistent. And this one really intrigued me because the more it kind of came to a pointy sort of place in May, the more I started to think, this is actually quite a crummy process.
Yeah.
Because I don't know exactly what the problem definition is. I don't know exactly what better would look like to go to your point.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be, I sort of said on LinkedIn the other day, it's got a sort of a strong hint of sort of heavy persuasion and even kind of the emperor's whim.
Yeah.
And without being too glib about it, this is literally going to sort of be a process where councils put their best presentation forward to a minister who sort of sits there and their thumb either goes up or down.
Yeah, that's a bit like that,
and
isn't it?
And I know governments do that, but it just seems quite arbitrary.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you nailed it with that first comment about what is the problem we're trying to solve here.
Yes.
Because without true definition, and of course the problem might be different in lots of different places, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like sometimes it's that actually you don't have, the base, the population base to be able to afford the infrastructure. And somewhere else it might be that your debt has meant that you've been unable to service stuff and other, you know, everyone's got a different thing, right?
Yeah.
So, what are you thinking? And how does data help us with this?
Well, what I'm thinking is, where do you start on this? But I think I've got a lot of sympathy for councils. And when I listen to their take on this and their response to this, I think firstly I admire the fact that they are responding and they're responding diligently. They're not sort of just giving government the bird. There's no statutory requirement for them to even respond to this. You know, they could arguably just say, sorry, I didn't hear you. But they are responding. So I think they know themselves that there is a problem. And if you sort of say, well, what's the framing of that problem? Well, I think there's a couple of indicators I'd look at for that. The first is the degree to which the community actually engages with their council.
Yes.
And so when you've got a situation where voter turnout now in the Waikato on average is somewhere below 40%. So something above 60% of all electors are just going, what's the point?
Yeah.
And that's a pretty troubling statistic.
Yeah, although it might not be what's the point. But I think for many it's, I don't know who these people are and I don't know, like at least party politics, you might go, okay, well, kind of know where people might sit, you know, and so sometimes just voting for individuals feels dangerous when you don't really know what they believe.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. When you look at the little booklet that comes out and you read each of these blurbs.
They're all the same.
They are. Yeah. They use buzzwords.
They do, exactly.
And they know the buzzwords. But I think there's a trend there as well.
And how well do people really know what it is their council does?
No. No,
yeah,
they often don't. And and that's to a certain degree as well, not necessarily council's fault, because I think most councils actually now communicate pretty intensively.
Yes.
You can't really avoid them on social media these days. They're everywhere. But to me, there is a signal there of some degree of disengagement.
Yeah.
And that's enough. If you were a private organisation and your customers were checking out to that degree, I think you'd go, I've got a bit of an issue here.
Yeah.
And of course, in the case of local government, like central government, but local government's a statutory monopoly. If you don't like your local council, well, barring moving house, you're stuck. And that's a tricky situation to be in. So I think that kind of creates a sort of degree of disengagement as well. So I think the voter turnout is one thing. The other thing that I've been a little bit more interested in recently is the financial performance of councils. And I think it's something that they often get thrashed around for, and because once again it's a bill you have to pay. If you don't pay your rates, actually the council stands in front of the bank.
That's right.
They can take the first call on your house. So they occupy a significant and important role and responsibility. And if you look at the trend of rates in the Waikato, I don't have all that information, but I've just recently been doing some work on Hamilton City, and I'm not picking on Hamilton City. But what's interesting is that their total rates bill since 2000 has increased sevenfold.
Wow.
Seven. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And even after inflation, it's a 400% increase.
Yeah.
So that says, all other things being equal, that the request that the council is making of its ratepayers has definitely increased. And of course, when price increases like that, then I think it's not unreasonable for the community to ask, well, where's the value proposition in this? So I think there is a genuine question.
Look, absolutely. Although when we look at what people are paying for rates around the region, we're actually not paying as much as many,
which is
really interesting. And when we look at other urban centres, we're still underrated. So, you know, our councils have been arguing that this is a fix, because for years, people running for election, go back to those buzzwords, people keep running on low rates.
Yeah.
And cap rate rises.
That's right. And of course, there's a real problem there, because councils
kick the can down the road. That's right.
Especially in terms of infrastructure.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, because we're still living in a time then where we're seeing these extreme increases in rates, and we are going to ask those hard questions, and those questions are fair.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And so if you look, just to use the example of Hamilton City, on average over the last 25 years, 7% compounding per year, with an indication that those rates are getting higher and higher in the last five or so years.
Yes.
So, you know, over 10% for the last 3 or 4 years. That's quite significant. And I did a little bit of work just out of curiosity a few months ago. I wonder how sensitive is the community to that rate bill in terms of councillor turnover?
Yeah.
In other words, is it a determinative factor? And what I found is that if councils are rating on average less than 10% per year increase, then your chances of being turfed out as a councillor are about 1 in 3.
Yeah.
And you might say that's a healthy rate of turnover anyway. It means, you know, there's enough new people coming in. But as soon as you get over that kind of 10% per year or 30% every 3 years, that rate of turnover doubles.
Yeah, wow.
Straight away.
Yeah.
It goes up to about 2/3 of your council get turned over. So I think there is a signalling in there from the community that there is a threshold here.
Yeah.
And especially for people on fixed incomes.
Yes.
Where you just don't have the choice. So you sort of take this and your water rates and your power and, you know, blah, blah, blah. If you're a super annuitant, this starts to actually eat into a lot of your income.
That's right.
There's an equity question.
Yeah.
But that's not to beat on councils, because I think a lot of the reason for this is things that get handed down to them by the government.
Yeah, and they have been. The government has devolved a lot more responsibility and the funding hasn't followed.
That's right.
And there are also, I know there's a lot of debate at the moment around the GST.
Yeah, yeah.
And council's really pushing back for GST on rates, you know, to come back to council, which would significantly increase the the income for councils.
Yeah, it would. And this conversation has been going on for quite some years now. I remember talking about it in Auckland in the early 2010s. Yeah. And the thing about it is it's not just the money, it's the incentive.
That's right.
So if you're a council at the moment and you've got a lot of demand for new housing in your area, like a lot do, there's absolutely no incentive to meet it because it just creates a bigger demand on your balance sheet and it just blows your debt out.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, the incentive is in the reverse. So I think the philosophy behind sort of GST earn backs or whatever you want to call them is actually really good because it would actually incentivise a council to say, well, actually putting our people in good homes is morally good thing and fiscally a good thing as well. So I like that idea.
Yeah. Okay. That is really interesting. I wonder about the difference, because what we've seen at the moment with negotiations that have been going on for months, it's still a very short process. Months sound like a long time. It's not a long time in trying to negotiate something quite significant. Do you think success looks different from a rural and an urban perspective? Is there
totally.
So can we talk a little bit about that and what the numbers might tell us?
Yeah. Well, I think inevitably it does because, the way your economy works if you're in Waitomo is completely different to how it works here in Hamilton. And the numbers will be much, much bigger. The risks will be much, much bigger. And so the rewards will look different as well. So I completely understand. If you take the current situation that we've got right now and how it's looking, you've got places like Waitomo or Torohanga saying, "Oh, we'll team up together."
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's not a bad idea. But it's a mile away from what the government was expecting.
Yeah.
You've got Taupō saying, "We just don't want to engage with this at all."
Yeah.
And their justification for it is their average per ratepayer debt at the moment is $900.
Yeah.
And under an amalgamation model, we'd go to $9,000.
Yeah.
Now, 10 times sounds huge. I don't know whether $9,000 per ratepayer is actually sustainable or not. It probably is. But the point is you can hear in that a sense that we are losing control of our own destiny.
And I suppose one of the questions then that each of the councils needs to ask in the amalgamation conversation is, does the debt of one area and community get transferred across all of those, or should that, and it's largely often infrastructure debt, stay with that area? And I think a number of them have been trying to have some of those conversations about what does that look like? Do we take on your liabilities as well?
Yeah. And of course, all these things are possible. There are enough creative accountants that could work that one out.
Yeah.
But when you kind of listen to it, you kind of go, so now we're kind of creating the second order
That's
of
right.
belts and braces and tricks.
And then where are our wins?
Exactly. But to be fair as well, right now, for example, if you're a regional ratepayer in eastern Waikato, in Hauraki or somewhere like that, then your flood control schemes are being contributed to by ratepayers in Hamilton.
Yeah.
There is already
a
degree of cost subsidisation going on around the region, which some of these deals might actually break. So you might find people in Pairua suddenly finding that the amount that they pay for flood control on the Waiho River goes up.
Yeah.
Because they're not part of the Western Bloc or whatever they might decide to call themselves. So there's unintended consequences to look at very carefully. And to your point, 90 days is not enough to work this out. Auckland, there was a 2-year Royal Commission process and about another year and a half of a transition authority working through the alternatives to actually put the thing in place. This one was a cabinet paper and a press release.
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah. Have you thought about or do we know about what councils are measuring and what they are calling success? How do they measure success currently?
Well, usually through a combination of traditional financial indicators in terms of balance sheets whether they've got surpluses or deficits and the amount of debt. And I think the amount of debt looms large in a lot of people's minds.
Yes, absolutely.
And part of that is because government actually has an imposed hard upper limit on debt that it can't breach. It's something like, I think it's 280% of your annual income, which if you think about it, as individuals, we regularly breach those when we go and borrow for a house.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not very high. And then the other way they measure it, of course, is in terms of outputs. Delivery of service and some sort of measure outcome. But if you read an annual report from a council, they're great reads, but you've got to sit down and work your way through it. It's not easy, and that's because they deliver such a huge variety and breadth of service. You can't kind of get to this council scored 7 out of 10 this year.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You could work your way to that, but it's very... It's measuring in so many different dimensions that I think it often just gets kind of reduced to one or two that you can just speak about easily, like
and
debt.
And fiscal measurements are easy, but how do we measure community satisfaction?
Yeah, well, you can do that. Quite a few councils measure quality of life.
Yeah.
So they do actually go out and ask their community, how are you going? How's
and do they
life?
Have higher engagement than during the election cycle?
I actually don't know. I would guess not, because most surveys like that have a pretty low response rate. And I mean, if you got 40% response rate on a survey, you'd be doing really
absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't think so. So again, it kind of comes back to I don't really think councils can be blamed a lot for the situation that they are in. I think they are a bit of a hostage of fortune in terms of the way the system works. I mean, could they be more diligent about some of the spending they do? I suspect they could, because it's pretty hard for a monopoly not to resist that temptation.
Yeah.
I mean, you only have to look at the regional council this year. They pulled a 0.9% rate increase out of the hat. It's like, wow, that's interesting. The year that you've told you're not going to exist.
Yeah.
How convenient.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think it's possible, but at what cost, Holly?
You know, and it's hard to know, but, you know, you hear rumours, you hear talk that when someone knows it's a job for council, they put another zero on the invoice, you know. And so we do have to wonder about, even during that commissioning process, you know, what's happening there and how much are we partners in this, and how much are people trying to make money out of it?
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. And, of course, it's pretty hard to actually find an absolute answer on that. I mean, most councils do have reasonable procurement processes, but often you're talking to a pretty small pool of suppliers, and whether they mean to or not, sometimes those suppliers will just kind of divvy the work around amongst themselves. And they will sort of almost inadvertently set the price. Mm. So it's an imperfect system that we're working with, but none of that, in my view, justifies this absolute hammer of an approach that's coming through right now. I don't think, we'll find out in a couple of days' time to a degree, but I don't think it's going to end well. I don't.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to know what's... nothing can happen quickly, right? These are still slow-moving ships. Mm. And whatever sort of rises up through that decision-making process, it will still take time to set up the systems and all of that. But in doing that, I suppose here's the opportunity, right, in terms of we're doing a big reset. And I think all political parties currently are saying, regardless, something needs to happen in local government because it is not working how it is currently structured. Mm. So if we're restructuring everything and we've got a bit of a blank slate, this is an opportunity, right, for a reset in terms of thinking about what do we start capturing with our data? How do we start measuring success? Yeah. And if we've got like a start point, it is a great new opportunity, right?
In that way it is. Yeah,
So from your perspective as the data man and insights man, what sort of things do you think councils could or should be thinking about as they're going into a process of becoming a whole new kind of entity?
That's a good question. I think almost all that data exists right now.
Yeah.
And as I said, if you went and looked at their annual reports, you'd find a lot of data there which actually would inform you quite well. Probably there's an opportunity to make a lot more of that data consistent.
Yeah.
And so you're actually seeing an apple with an apple, or not a gala with a jazz. You know, it's actually the same apples. And then for that to be aggregated together somewhere where you can go and actually look at it all at once.
Mm.
Because, not everyone, but most people pay a rates bill. But I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people can't even tell you exactly where they are.
Yeah.
What's my council? I can't remember. And so it's your place that matters. So if you could actually bring that data together in a form where people could say, well, I'm in this place.
Yeah.
So I want to find out about waste collection yeah. in my place and see how well that performs and then have some comparators across other organisations. So, look, I don't think there's any magic data that's mm. all there. It has to be simply a combination of what's the service you provide, how good is the service in terms of the output,
yeah.
What outcome does that link to? So if you said rubbish, okay, well, that's the output is, well, was my rubbish collected on time?
Yeah.
The outcome might well be, are we actually sending more to landfill in the long term mm. or less, and is there more pollution or less? But do that in a way where that data is pretty easy to get to,
mm.
and there's a reasonable degree of commentary that goes with it. So you're not sitting there looking at a spaghetti graph going, I yeah. do not know what that means.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And it's all out there. I think, you know, there's an information overload on people mm. these days. They're overwhelmed with this stuff.
We've seen people withdraw from a lot of this kind of surveying and stuff. And what's sort of top of my mind is census, for example,
yeah.
you know, that there was really quite a strong movement across the country where people just stopped engaging mm. in census.
Mm.
And it will have a significant impact in terms of, you know, that data source that was so significant and comprehensive. Mm. Do you think under a new system like we're developing now, there is an opportunity to perhaps capture it more based on communities rather than through a government kind of single source?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so what the government's talking about is going to what they call administrative data, which is all the data they collect about people in all sorts of other ways, and it gets
yeah.
put into this thing called the integrated data infrastructure. And it probably is technically quite robust.
Yes.
But as you say, it doesn't really reflect anything about the person
no.
per se. And the only way you get into that system is if you engage with these services.
Yes.
You know, so if you haven't been to hospital, if you haven't been to jail, if you haven't been to this, you haven't been to that,
yeah.
you're not represented. So I think that's fine. There might be some efficiency in there. What I would like to see is probably a much more organized approach to sort of quality of life, subjective well-being surveying going on
yes.
continuously in communities and in regions so that we can see how subjective well-being evolves over time and
yeah.
what are the things that are driving subjective well-being, because that's really, in the long run,
yes,
that's the thing that actually matters the most. And it may be that kind of language and actually talking back to our communities in a language which is the language which they use.
Yes.
That might actually help with the engagement thing, because then the onus would be on councils of whatever form to say, we heard you on this, this is what we're doing, this is how it will positively contribute to your well-being. I'm
yeah.
not using that word for my convenience.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And so now maybe part of the problem here is that the machinery of local government, the language of local government has moved a little bit too far away from the reality of people.
Yeah.
And so it becomes this remote technocratic thing.
Although I do think I'm sure that has happened to an extent, but I think it's the other side as well, as we've lost that civics education, civics engagement,
oh, yeah.
you know. And so you've got the two things happening. That polarizes, you
yeah.
know, governments, local governments from communities, whereas if we're taught what it all is and we understand politics in a far more nuanced and, you know, insightful way rather
yeah.
than this, you know, almost clickbait type of
yeah.
Headlines that we get that
yeah.
seem to be forming people's concepts of
yeah.
politics.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right, Holly. And yeah, a lot of these previous rituals of community have
yeah.
dissolved.
Yes.
You know, to a certain degree.
The old town hall kind of stand up.
The old town hall meeting,
yeah.
The ritual of going to vote.
Yes.
You know, there's a legitimate question. Is postal voting actually more of a problem
yeah.
than a solution? Should
well,
we
especially
actually
now there are no post boxes.
Well exactly right. You know, should we have local government and central government voting on the same day?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
I think that would actually really work because
yeah.
you just do it.
Yeah.
You just get along and do it. So I think a lot of these kind of structures of community have fallen away because we're all now hiding behind our screens.
Yes.
And that's difficult for local councils because it means that they can't engage through those traditional civic
avenues.
processes that necessarily everyone used to get involved with, because everyone would go to the town hall meeting because what else did you do on a cold Sunday night? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
So that's tricky. That's really, really tricky for them.
And I think it's also around our psyche, right? Like, you know, what we see as our responsibility as active citizens.
Oh, yeah. And I was thinking about when you were talking about that, and I think, for a lot of people, I don't want to characterise people at all, but I think for a lot of people, their view on local government would be, just get on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't stop asking me all the time. Just get on with it and just do your job well, which works fine until it doesn't.
Yes.
And then, of course, it flips. Oh, yeah. You didn't talk to me. You didn't engage. You do things without asking, blah, blah, blah. So it's a trust. Maybe trust is the question here. What's pushing this is maybe a disconnection of trust between central and local government and a disconnection of trust between local government and their communities.
Yeah.
So they're in the middle there. I think right now it would be a pretty hard ask for communities to come to the rescue of local government and say, don't touch our councils. That's probably happened a bit, but I think they've kind of lost that social license.
Yes.
And so they're a little bit exposed in that sense, because there's no one, there's nobody for them right now. And I think they're at risk of something happening to them, which actually is arguably worse than the status quo. And that's, unfortunately, I think this government's quite naive about this. You know, they're acting like the inexperienced CEO who comes into an organisation and says, I'm just going to restructure this.
Yeah, that's right.
And we've all seen the results of that.
Yeah. It's interesting times, right? And and time will tell
where
the chips fall. But it is an opportunity as well, isn't it? And certainly around how it is that perhaps councils, maybe it's a good lesson about how it is councils maintain relationships with their communities.
Yeah, it is. And look, if I had the privilege of doing this, I think I'd linger more on the problem definition.
Yeah.
And I'd actually engage.
Yeah.
I'd actually get out and ask communities and collect that information with no hint of a solution. I collect. And then once the pattern started to emerge, I think what I would do, this is easier to say when you're not a politician, but what I would do is I'd say, what are the things that we could do that don't require structural change or massive cost that could actually start to address some of these things very cheaply, very effectively? Yeah. So an example would be, right now every council's got a finance department, every council's got an HR department, blah, blah, blah. What if we actually just went really large on shared services, and we said that you just have to, because there's not really any great difference across all those councils and those things.
And I want to go cough, like water, which was proposed under the last administration.
Water's a whole other conversation, isn't it? But if you worked through those things and you worked through the things which don't really face the citizen first, and then you did structure.
Perfect. Perfect place to end on.
Cool.
Thank you so much. That is Harvey joining us again. He will be back. We'll continue our conversations about data. Thank you for joining us, Harvey. And you've been listening to Connect with Community Waikato, Free FM 89.0.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.